Just, I want to give the audience an awareness warning. This podcast episode will discuss childhood sexual abuse, child pornography, and abuse at large. So be aware of that when you're watching or listening. We cover those topics, and they can be heavy for a lot of people. But this podcast is really about hope, healing, and finding the ability to live in recovery from trauma. I met Jesslyn Biederstadt after guesting on her podcast, Invisible Scars podcast, which I highly recommend you check out. And her story intrigued me to say the least. Jesslyn is a mother of two, a loving wife, a kind-hearted soul, and a giver to all those around her. She loves with her whole heart. She is also a multi-tiered trauma survivor and certainly now the hero of her own journey. She is going to be featured as a guest contributing author in my forthcoming fourth book, out mid-2024, Unbroken, The Power in Removing the Label of Suffering and Breaking the Cycle of Victimhood. Jesslyn's story is powerful, palpable, and visceral. You do not want to miss this episode, and you do not want to miss picking up that book when it comes out. Jesslyn, welcome to the Hindsight's podcast. It is an absolute honor to have you on the show today.
Oh my gosh, Kevin, thank you so much. Honestly, hearing your introduction, it made me cry. I think like a lot of times as trauma survivors, we're not used to hearing these things about ourselves. And it takes so much work to believe these good things about ourselves. We're so quick to believe the bad. And to hear someone like you that I respect so much say that about me, it just literally brought tears to my eyes. So thank you.
Well, I can appreciate that. I cry all the time. And as I always say, we all have tear ducts. They're there for a reason. I don't know if you know this, Jesslyn, but chimpanzees have no tear ducts.
What?
They want to cry, but they can't.
Isn't that horrible?
That's horrible, right? So, you know, just be aware that we're lucky that we can cry.
It's so true.
All right, we are going to get right into it. Jesslyn, first and foremost, tell us a bit about yourself. Where are you from and what do you do today?
Yeah, I am from a small town in northern British Columbia in Canada, Prince George, and we recently moved to the beautiful Okanagan. It is wine country here in Canada, in BC, and we are so, so happy here. Like you said, I have two kids. I am married. You know, we live a really beautiful life today, and I'm a host of a podcast that is my heart and soul, and yeah, we've worked really hard to be where we are, so...
I love that. And it's crucial to work really hard, even in the pain you might be in, so you can get out of that pain and find hope on the other side.
Totally.
Jesslyn, obviously, it seems like you're doing incredibly well today. And you have these amazing, wonderful people in your life, your husband, your children, others. But it hasn't always looked like that for you. Take us back to your upbringing and get into what were some of the experiences you dealt with early on.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I never realized how much trauma I actually had in my life. I really thought it was this one event, this one abuse event, but it truly was kind of my entire childhood. I was born to a mother who had a drug addiction. She was addicted to alcohol. She was quite young when she had me. I never knew who my dad was. And so I was raised by a single young mom and my grandparents, and she was really neglectful. And from what I've been told, there was a lot of me crying in my crib, not being changed, just not being nurtured in the way I should have as a baby. And that kind of went on until forever, really. And as I got older, you know, the drug abuse became worse. My mom got married and had another child who is my brother. And we spent most of our really young years in a violent home where there was no stability and a ton of partying and neglect. And, you know, I would see things like cocaine at 8 years old. I knew what those things were from a very, very young age. So a ton of trauma, a ton of neglect, people I loved in and out of my life. So then comes into play abandonment, right? So I had to do a lot of very grown up things from a very young age, helping look after my brother who was 6 years younger and keeping us safe. And that was always kind of my main goal, was keeping us safe. You know, and as time went on, because my parents were very much, drugs were their priority, I guess you could say. And my grandfather kind of was involved in that whole party scene as well. And they had introduced us to some very horrible people who went on to sexually abuse us, my brother and I, and create and distribute child pornography. And this went on for about a couple years.
Jesselyn, no child should have to go through that kind of pain. But as I think about the work you do, and certainly the work I do traveling the world, sharing my story, do you know that the most common thing I hear around the world, in every continent but Antarctica, since I haven't been there, is that two things, that children are being bullied at home, being bullied at school, being bullied by cyberbullying. And the second most popular thing I hear, which should not be popular at all, is that children are being neglected and abused at home in some way, shape, or form, or many forms. Mm-hmm. And so you having to deal with that is appalling. I'm sorry you dealt with all of that and have to deal with the repercussions. Even today, I'm sure it still affects you. I can't imagine going through something like that, but I'm so glad that you came through on somewhat of the other side to give back to your community today through the Invisible Scars podcast, sharing stories that offer healing and hope to so many people. I'd love if you could share a bit about what made you so passionate to heal from trauma first and mental health, and passionate to give back to others.
You know, when I think about it, I've always wanted to help. It was something that was really embedded in my soul from the time I was younger. And when I think about helping my brother and trying to protect him, and then afterwards, you know, after our abusers were caught, we had to go through this huge trial process that was very public. And we were not the only children this happened to. It was actually, there was quite a few. And like I said, there were so many adult things that were being asked of me. Even going to trial, you know, I was at 9 years old, I was asked to stand up on a stand and help put these people in jail. And we did that. You know, we helped put them in jail. The guy is actually a dangerous offender, so it's very difficult for him to get out of jail. And after that, you know, I thought I could have some peace, but I ended up in foster care, and, you know, the pain kind of continued on. And one thing that I can say that I always did was I numbed it. Whether that be, you know, partying with my friends or excessive partying. You know, I also had a suicide attempt when I was 16 years old. And I always would say to myself, if I just don't think about it, I won't feel it. It won't affect me. And I did that for so long that I remember, you know, being from 16 on thinking, this huge thing happened to me. Why does it not bother me? I remember thinking, like, I'm unaffected by this giant trauma, this sexual abuse that happened. It doesn't even bother me. But I had buried it so deep that I couldn't even feel it anymore. But the effects of it were still showing up everywhere in my life. I was letting myself be taken advantage of by men. I was putting myself in dangerous situations. I was not looking after myself. I got in a drinking and driving car accident where I should have lost my life. Like, I was continuously putting myself in dangerous situations. And the thing about it is, when you don't deal with it, you really think you're numb to it. Okay, I don't have to feel this. And then all of a sudden, on an idle Tuesday, when you think that your life is okay, it hits you like a ton of bricks, and it forces you to look at it. And I spent so many years feeling less than. I felt so many years feeling broken, feeling ugly, unworthy, that I was, you know, damaged in so many ways that nobody could ever love me. And I don't want other people to suffer the way I did for as long as I did. And I think that if I would have had someone sharing their stories and someone relating to me on that level, I probably could have done a lot better a lot earlier.
Would you say, I'm just curious, would you say for a long time you silenced your pain? You quieted it, you buried it. Because when you say that you felt numb and you said it didn't affect you, would you call that silencing your pain?
Oh yeah, 100%. I silenced my pain so intensely. And you know, the interesting thing is, and I've talking with other survivors on my podcast, we all kind of have the same thing in common where it doesn't matter what the trauma is. It's, we numbed it so much. We silenced our pain so much, but the second we would let our guard down by being out with friends or drinking or doing whatever recreational things we would do, I would be the girl who would get so drunk and then it would come out and it would just spew out of me. All those things that I'd been hiding would just spew out of me. And I would tell somebody or anybody who would listen, this happened to me, this happened to me, this happened to me. And then I would wake up the next morning with this intense anxiety and thinking, what did I do? I overshared. I just like, now people think this of me. I can't hide it anymore. And it was just this perpetual like cloud of darkness that I would continue to create for myself by hiding it.
Because of the cycles of violence that you experienced, the cycles of abuse you experienced, you fell into your own cycle of I guess I would call it brokenness, for lack of a better word. You had to heal from that. I have a question that I think is very important for the people out there who have been in similar situations but want to grow in their current relationships. How do you make sure the abuse you endured does not define who you are today? And do you think it has ever defined who you were in your past actions?
Such a good question. Did it define who I was in my past action? I let it define who I was. That was completely within my control. And how I don't let it define me today is I have like literally taken back my power, you know, and that just like really comes from feeling what needs to be felt, acknowledging the things that I've been through. Here's the key: forgiving myself for the things I did when I didn't have the information, when I didn't have the ability to heal, when I buried the strength I had in me. I let that be buried as well by thinking I wasn't strong enough to feel what I needed to feel, by thinking that there was no way out. You know, that's a big one for me too, is for so long, Kevin, I felt like there was no way out of this pain. And I know you can relate to that, right? Like I felt like it was swallowing me whole and I had to pretend like it wasn't happening. And today, through therapy is a big one for me. And I know a lot of people shy away from therapy, and I did for a lot of years too, because I had such a bad experience with it as a child. But I love therapy today. It keeps me on track. It helps me, it helps it not swallow me whole. So feeling what needs to be felt, acknowledging the things that had happened to you, and also forgiving yourself. Like you have to forgive yourself for the things that you did to yourself and to other people when you were broken and didn't know any better.
Crucial. Forgiveness is so important in that aspect. I always say we are each 1,000 times greater than the worst thing you've ever done or said or been.
Well said.
And I think that for people who feel broken or had been broken by other people first, it's easy to hurt those in front of you. And you have to recognize it, you have to take responsibility for it, and you have to find ways to move forward. Do you still go through mental, or as I call it, brain pain?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you actually said something to me that it sticks in my head constantly from our very first conversation. And you said, I'm not recovered, I'm in recovery. And that just, honest to God, Kevin, like when you said that, it's imprinted in my soul now, because it's so true. We can always do better. I'm constantly going to evolve. We're always going to evolve. I'm going to still do things that I'm going to wake up tomorrow and be like, that was not the best version of me. I probably hurt that person. Now I know what I need to do to fix it. And there are still days where I get into that dark hole where I spiral a little bit emotionally, where mentally I'm not the strongest, where I'm not showing up as the best mom or the best wife or friend. And, you know, those days where I'm just like plain feeling sorry for myself. But the difference now is that I have the tools to not stay as long. So I still go back to those dark places. I'm going to, but I have the tools now and I know how to do it to not stay as long. And I think that's key.
That is key. And I think you're staying safe from the pain that you're experiencing, and you're acknowledging it, you're recognizing it, you're addressing it, and then you're changing your outcome, which is crucial. I think that's a really tall story of how you can become self-aware inside your greatest turmoil so that you can survive it, which is really crucial.
Yeah.
Jesslyn, how did your child abuse affect, or did it affect your marriage today?
Hugely. And I think a lot of sexual abuse survivors can really relate to this. It deeply impacted my marriage in so many ways. First of all, trust. At first it's over trusting because I really wanted to feel loved because I never felt it as a child. I had this skewed sense of what an intimate relationship meant because of my first experiences with intimacy, obviously. It took a long time for me to trust him. It took a long time for me to let my walls down. And, when I say a long time, I'm talking years. And I don't think that him and I even really started to dig into it until I started my own healing journey and realizing, like, I've always kept him a little bit on the outside, which A, is not fair, leaves him confused. And I didn't, because of my own burying my pain and ignoring it, things would trigger me out in the world. And suddenly I would go from this really happy person to completely triggered, angry, reactive, not saying kind things. And he's left confused. My partner is left confused, not knowing what to do, probably also a little jaded and pissed off, to be honest. And we couldn't communicate about it because I didn't even understand what was happening. So, it's really interesting because he didn't know how to help me because I didn't know how to help me. And he also would forget that these things had happened to me because I would never talk about it. So because I was so good at pretending everything was fine, I would be triggered and then be mad at him for not understanding, what was triggering me or how to handle it. And he would look at me and say, but Jesslyn, you're fine 98% of the time. So I forget that this happened to you. So, a lot of that, I was blaming him, but a lot of that was on me. And that's been something that I have really, really worked on in the last couple of years as I'm going through this process, is understanding that, I have to help myself before I can rely on anybody else, because how are they supposed to know what I need when I don't know?
Yeah, very true. It's the old saying, no one's coming to save you. You have to save yourself. Can you tell us, as you talk about that part of your journey, tell us about what really pushed you to begin this healing path that you took, and what did that look like? We know you went to therapy, but what else did you do to find peace?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like from all the other survivors I've talked to on my podcast, it's rare that someone sits down and is like, oh, this really horrible thing happened to me. Maybe I should work on that. Like, usually there's something that's tripped you up, something that's triggered you. And mine had nothing to do with my trauma at all. So I thought, I had this experience with a friend that had really triggered me and really hurt me. And that is what sent me to therapy, that I was so deeply hurt and troubled by what had happened. It rocked me. I couldn't get out of bed. I was crying every single day. And in the meantime, I was about to launch a brand new business. And so the timing of it was absolutely horrible. And I remember thinking, I cannot feel this way anymore. What is going on? I can't get out of bed. I can't be a good mom. What the hell? My best friend luckily is a psychologist, and she had been telling me for years, my anxiety, Kevin, was so crippling. I could not function day to day. I was shaking. I would, like, when I think back to the anxiety I was living in, it was so intense. And this, experience with a friend sent my anxiety to an entirely new level that I didn't even think was possible. And my best friend had said, it's time, you got to look at some medication. You got to talk to a therapist, Jess. And she recommended a therapist, and I started to go to therapy talking about this incident with a friend. And lo and behold, it really wasn't even the incident with a friend that was sending me over the edge. It was the triggers from that event that reminded me of my trauma. So being asked not to say something, being silenced, being told that I can never tell anybody. And these things were really triggering me. And through therapy, you know, I had, not saying that medication is for everyone, I was firmly against it for many years just because of my own suicide attempt. But I got on an anxiety medication, which really helped me get to a clear spot in my head, to be able to rationalize things. Because when you're in those really crazy, high intense anxiety panic moments, you can't rationalize anything. You can't make sense of anything. And so that really helped me balance my emotions, balance my thoughts, and determine what was reality and what was not reality. That, and then I really started to lean into meditations. I always thought meditation was something I could never accomplish because I couldn't silence my thoughts. I couldn't sit still. I couldn't do any of those things that were required for meditation. But I started with an active meditation. I use the Superhuman app. So it's guided. You can go out walking and do it. And I've been using it for 2 years and it has helped me so much. I never could get on a plane. My anxiety was so intense. I couldn't fly. If I did fly, I was the girl screaming in the back. And now I can fly absolutely no problem, no Ativan. Just taking control of my emotions, remembering to slow down, and self-care is a big one. And you know what I want to really drive home for all the listeners? When you have been living in survival mode for a year, 2 years, 30 years, as I was, it is really hard to come out of that. You don't know how to not be in flight or fight. And when you start to unravel that and you start to come down and you realize like, okay, I can actually live not in fight or flight, you are so exhausted. Yeah. You are so tired. Your nervous system is finally resting. Your body is like, okay, I've been in this for 30 years, a year, whatever it is. And it is so freaking exhausting. And one mistake I made was I was so hard on myself. I was like, I'm lazy. I'm not a good mom. What am I doing? Why can't I get out of bed? What is happening to me? And, you know, it's just a natural part of the process. And as in type A, very hyper person, it took so much work for me to be able to be kind to myself and say, no, I've just put my mind, my body, my nervous system through absolute hell for the last 30 years of my life. It is okay for me to have two naps today. It is okay for me to just wind down, to just sit, to not do anything. You know, like that was a huge mistake I made. And I just want everyone to try and be so much kinder to themselves and know there's nothing wrong with you, that this is such a natural part of the process. And you owe it to yourself to slow down, to rest as long as you need to rest.
Rest is an indelible right when you've gone through that much. And you briefly talked about something very important that I think a lot of people could learn from. Specifically, you spoke about using the Superhuman app. Mm-hmm. I'm well aware of that app. Can you talk a little bit about how that helps you in your healing journey specifically?
You know, in the app, you can find it. There's thousands of meditations on there. So whether you want to do a walking meditation or a writing meditation or while you're cooking, or, you know, there's the way that they bring you out of your head and into your body. It's not something I could naturally do on my own. And now that I've done it so many times through the app, I can. So it's very much like, feel your heart beating. Like it really brings you back to center with help. Because for those of us who are hyperactive, who have a raging nervous system, who have uncontrollable racing thoughts, we can't comfortably do that on our own. And this app, I've said it so many times, has changed my life. It has helped me slow down. It has helped me be in the moment. It's helped me regulate my breath, helped me regulate my emotions, regulate my thoughts. Even if it's just for like 5 minutes, we need that break.
Yeah.
And the more you do it, the more comfortable you're going to feel, the more natural it'll feel. And then you're going to be able to carry out that pause in your raised nervous system, in your thoughts. You're going to be able to carry out that peace for longer than 5 minutes, for longer than 10 minutes. And all of a sudden it'll be a day and then a week, and then you're going to feel it again. And then you just do it again. And it's just been a really important part of my practice.
Yeah, the brain is not just an organ, it's a muscle, and you have to exercise it And the more you exercise your brain, the better your body will feel, the better your mind will feel, the better your mental health will be, and the better the better your personality will become, and you'll be able to interact with people even when triggered, and get past it quicker, more calm, and more seamlessly. It's incredible. Oh, it's so
you just don't stay as long.
I love that. I love that. Was there anyone in your life that played a major or even a minor role in your healing journey in the years following your trauma? And if so, can you talk about those people?
Absolutely. You know, I say often that one of the hardest parts about jumping into a healing journey and really putting yourself first and figuring out who you are, what you need, is the great season of loss that you go through. And, you know, some of these relationships that you have in your life are not going to carry through as you start to heal these traumas. You know, some people just, the broken version of you fits better. And I lost some people in my life. You know, we just didn't fit in each other's life anymore. There's no bad blood. There's none of that. It's just this season of loss that you have to go through. And also, you're saying goodbye to a version of yourself that you've held on to for so freaking long that no longer serves you. And it's hard. And the key people in my healing journey, number one, my husband, you know, I could not do this without him. And I just want to take a second for any partners out there who are listening, who are trying to help navigate someone they love going through a healing journey of trauma and processing trauma. It is not easy. And, you know, you are often forgotten about. It is this season of putting the other person first and putting your own needs aside for that person that you love. And, you know, it's the most selfless thing somebody can do. I truly believe it, because he has watched me at my lowest. He has held me in the dark when I couldn't get out of bed all day. He has looked after our daughter and done the dance dad stuff and sewn on buttons and done all these things because mom couldn't get out of bed. And in all of that, he also put aside his own needs for the better part of a year to really help me be who I needed to be and get to where I needed to be. And it's not an easy thing. And, you know, I think a lot of times people think, you know, it's not a good time for me to start this journey. It's not a good time for me to heal. It's not, we have this going on. We're launching a business. We're moving. We're doing whatever. The kids need this. The truth is there's no good time. You just really, when you feel the call, take it. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to the people you love to just freaking take that call and run with it, because you will get there so much quicker than if you deny it. And, you know, he was critical in that. And I know not everyone has a partner that they're able to do that with, but, you know, finding somebody. And I have my best friend, like I said, she's a psychologist. She was critical in that for me. And also my therapist. She is the most amazing human. I literally don't know how I could live without her at this point. Like, once you find that person you mesh with and that person that sees you and you feel safe with, it's like magic. It's like magic. And those are really the three people that really have had my back so deeply in all of this, and that I know that without a doubt, I couldn't do this without.
Beautifully said, and so important to find the people in your life to be a support for you. And yes, it's true. Not everybody has the support network that you and I have built, but remember, we built it. Yeah. It wasn't always there. And there's something to be said about that. Yes, we have to save ourselves, but we also have to align ourselves with people who can empathize, understand, comprehend, and be kind to us and compassionate about the pains we experience.
You know, Kevin, I actually love that you said that, because I want everyone to remember, like, one of my fears when I started this podcast was that I won't be relatable. You know, I wanted to make sure that I was really relatable, and it is not lost on me that two things. Number one, I don't know how I'm living the life I'm living. First of all, I feel often that I have no business living this life. I don't know how I got here. And it's also not lost on me that my husband and I have built this really beautiful life together, but it was not always that way. So I don't have parents that I can rely on. I came from poverty. I lived in really horrible neighborhoods. The heat got shut off in the winters and I would end up with pneumonia. We had Salvation Army baskets brought to our home at Christmas time because we couldn't afford food and presents. And, you know, just because my life looks a certain way now, I also know what it's like to be in that spot where you feel like there's no money for me to go to therapy. There's no one in my corner to be able to help support me through this. And I don't want to take those resources because I'm embarrassed or I'm ashamed of where I came from. I have been there. This world I'm living in now did not just happen. We fought freaking hard for it. And there was days where we almost gave up. But I think that the key is to not give up. Use your resources. I always say, if somebody tells you no, you're not asking the right person. And I have really lived my life on this. And, you know, anything is possible. Like when I look at where I came from and where I am today, I launched an online clothing business. I've started this podcast. And when people say to me, you know, it's all who you know, or you must know somebody, I promise you it is not who I know. I literally Googled who the best person was to do this with me. And I sent an email. Like I just will use my resources and call people and find, when it comes to finding a therapist or when it comes to finding help in your community, do your research, because like you said, Kevin, no one is showing up to save you. We got to dig deep and we got to do it for ourselves.
We really do. And I share a similar narrative. You were in foster care. I was in foster care. My beginnings were in abject poverty, living in and out of crack motels, being fed Kool-Aid, Coca-Cola, and sour milk as my first diet, damaging my brain's functionality at the cellular level from birth. You know, that's, I think, partly why I was so intrigued by your stories, because we connect on a deeper level than just for face value of our stories. It's what we've been through. It's what we've endured. It's how we've come out on the other side to find a modicum of success, which is really amazing. But I have a really important question for you right now, which this one I really love to know the answer of. You and your husband have two beautiful children now. And looking back on your childhood, how do you feel like it affects the way you raise your children today?
Oh, I love this question. It imperatively affects it so, so deeply, Kevin. You know, from the early years, after having my daughter, so we have two kids. One is my stepdaughter. And I was so protective of her very early on. You know, I was around from the time she was very young, before she was one. And when she kind of got to that age of going to friends' houses and stuff, you know, as the step parent, I don't have a lot of say, and her parents didn't have the same experience as I did. And so I was very nervous and I was like, please don't let her sleep over at somebody's house. Please don't do this. But, you know, I didn't have a ton of control in that. When it came to our daughter, you know, I had a very hard time after having her immediately. I had a rocky birth and I had a rocky pregnancy. I had a hard time connecting because I didn't ever want to admit that. It was very shameful. And I know a lot of moms feel that way. And looking back now, I was never connected to a mother figure. So I didn't naturally learn how to be connected to another human being on a deep level, and also as a parent. So that was really difficult for me to admit, accept. I'm so shameful. You know, it didn't take long, obviously, but it was something that was really bothering me and it ate me up. And, you know, I had postpartum depression really bad and postpartum anxiety really bad. And here's the key. I lied about it. Every doctor's appointment I went to, because I was ashamed. I thought they'd take my baby away. I was embarrassed. And, you know, I think so many of us go through that. And as trauma survivors, like, it's always there. And we hide that shame and we're not honest with anybody about how we're feeling. And that deeply impacted me as a new mom. And, you know, today my daughter is 10. She is so beautiful and well-rounded and outgoing. And there are things that I look at now, sleepovers, you know, I didn't allow her to have sleepovers at anyone else's house for many, many years. We're starting to get into that now. Very nervous. You know, I gave my daughter a phone at 9 years old because as she was like in dance competitions and going to friends' houses, I needed that contact. So with what happened to me in the sexual abuse, I remember running around looking for a phone to try and call somebody, and there was no phone to be found. And that is my fear for her. So, you know, when people are judging me saying, you gave your daughter, a 9-year-old, a phone, I'm like, yes, but this is a safety concern. So that was something that helped ease my nerves. And, you know, I'm really trying hard to let go a little bit. I'm trying to let her famous line is, Mom, you got to let me live a little. And it's difficult. But I know that for her to be a well-functioning adult, a well-functioning member of society, I can't protect her from everything. And these are my issues, not her issues. And it's a struggle. And I know so many of us feel that as parents, whether you've been abused or not. It's hard, Kevin. It is hard. It is something that I am working on in therapy constantly. But I know that for her own well-being and for her to be able to have healthy relationships, I have to be able to let her live a little, as she says.
Wow. Incredible insights from you there. Really, really appreciate those. Today, what kinds of tools and supports have helped you rebuild a life full of joy to stay in recovery from the trauma you've experienced? But to also, you know, you still have issues with what you went through. Obviously, you know, they creep up and things can trigger you. How do you handle all that?
Well, two major things. Therapy is one. I see my therapist weekly, sometimes bi-weekly, depending on how I'm doing. Another big one is boundaries. A lot of times as trauma survivors and sexual abuse survivors, we don't know how to set boundaries. We don't think we deserve to be able to set boundaries. We don't know how to stand up to people. We don't know how to put ourselves first. And boundaries has been a really big tool for me. And protecting, you know, my energy, protecting who I let in my life, who I share my time with, who the kind of content that I am absorbing is a big one. So, you know, it's very easy for us to get back in that cycle of I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not doing as well as this person, and really trying to change that narrative in my head and consume positive content on Instagram and on TV and all those things are really key to me staying on track. And even with what I watch, Kevin, like I can't watch things like Yellowstone. It's very intense. It's too dark. I watch Friends like every single night before bed because it makes me happy. You know, just I can't watch scary movies or things like that. So really controlling the content in my life is critical for me. Reading is something I was never capable of doing before, just because of how my thoughts would race. I couldn't consume the content because I was always firing, always in fight or flight. And now that I'm able to, you know, settle a little bit of my nervous system, I love reading. So I'm doing a ton of that. Don't read fiction. I read books like yours. I love to hear people's stories. And that's another thing that really has helped me in all of this is my podcast. Wow. And hearing other people's stories, it is so freaking humbling. And it is so imperative in my own healing to hear how other survivors have survived it, have come out the other side, how they're continuing to do it, how they're continuing to stay in recovery and heal. It's been incredible.
It has been incredible for you. And I think it is incredible to see and to watch your growth and how you're changing the lives of the people that listen to your podcast. On that note, let's talk about your podcast and the mission behind it. Break it down.
You know, when I launched it, I always thought I would write a book. Ever since I was like 13, I knew that my life was not normal, and that it was interesting. I knew that it was interesting. And I thought I would write a book to share my story because, you know, something we haven't touched on was how no one ever talked to me about what happened and how damaging that was for me. And how for most of my life, I wondered if it really happened because no one acknowledged it. And then, you know, writing a book felt like so powerful to me to be able to share my story. And because I couldn't sit and read a book myself, I thought, you know, I'm actually going to speak my story. I'm gonna tell it because I think people need to hear this. And from there, I thought, you know, I'm gonna share my story on this podcast platform. And I want to hear other people's stories, humbling stories, stories of survival, and have these people share their experiences to the next generation of people who are going to end up suffering, because we all will. This human experience that we're all living, you know, it's universal. And at some point we all are going to have to recover from something that happens in our life. And I just wanted there to be a platform where real people could share their real stories, you know, not the cute version. I wanted to really hear what happens to other humans and how they've survived it.
Incredible. And how has hearing these incredible, empowering stories of others helped you in your journey?
Well, first of all, I don't feel so alone. I don't feel like I'm the only one. I know a lot of people say that, and it feels strange to people who haven't gone through it, but you truly feel so isolated when you've been through something like this. You feel so different from everybody else in society. You feel like you can't function. You feel weird, you feel unworthy, and it has helped me so much. You know, there is no trauma Olympics. Pain is pain. It's universal. We all feel it. And, you know, it took a long time for me to realize that something big did happen to me. And I think when I started hearing other people's stories, I thought, what value do I have? Like, my story's not that big of a deal. And then hearing followers on Instagram and listeners reach out to me and say, oh my God, thank you so much. I've been living with this my whole life. I don't feel so alone. I've never told anybody. How do I tell somebody? How do I tell my partner? What do I do next? It was like this world opened up for me that was like, oh my God, okay, like this is a big deal. Other people are suffering the same way I'm suffering. And it helped me actually have some self-love for what I've been through and not, you know, just think, okay, I've been through this, I'm going to try and help people. It was like, no, I need to show my trauma some love. I need to show myself some love, because that's what I would wish for these people that are reaching out to me. And I'm in that category. I'm no different. I also deserve that love.
Yeah. And that self-love is so important. Mm-hmm. To finding a balance in life, especially when you've been through catastrophic trauma from such a young age. It's so crucial. And you're obviously helping so many people vocalize and unsilence their pain, which is incredible to say the least. Very special, actually. So you must be really happy about that. What are your goals beyond the podcast in supporting other survivors? Tell us about your other businesses and what you've got going on.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. So a year ago, I sat down at this retreat, I guess you could call it, with Jillian Harris. She actually launched something called the Jilly Academy, where she's helping women in business and doing all these things. And as I was sitting there, I was about to launch an online clothing boutique because I thought that that was what my soul wanted. And they're getting you to like really think big about what it is you want. And as I'm doing that and I'm writing down my big goals, there was three things on there that had absolutely nothing to do with the business I was about to launch. One was a podcast, one was writing a book, and one was traveling the world to speak to other survivors. And as I look back on that, I wrote that before I even thought of launching the podcast. It was just spewing out of me. And now that I've been meeting people like you, and I've been connecting with so many people in the trauma world and other experts and other survivors, I'm like, that is what I want to do. I want to be on the ground. I want to be holding somebody's hand. I want to be looking in their eyes and telling them and helping them know that I feel your pain. I hear you. You are worthy. And you know, when I launched this podcast, I was like, how can I do every interview in person? Because I feel that when people are sharing these deeply personal experiences, I want to be there in the human connection, helping them and showing them how much I freaking care. And obviously that isn't possible. So, you know, some of my big goals is just to be there on the ground, helping people in any way that I can. Do I know what that looks like yet? No, but I feel so compelled and so called to be in contact with other humans that have been through something so painful, because that human connection is so vital. It is so vital in helping others.
It truly is. And, you know, I'm going to share with you, you have this book, right? The Art of Being Broken.
I do.
It saves lives. I should probably send you a signed copy, right? You're a special.
I would love that.
I will do that. I'll do that this week. But you've agreed to be a contributing author in my next book, Unbroken, which is the third book in a three-part series. There was Cracked Not Broken, The Art of Being Broken, and now Unbroken. I'm really excited about it. It's going to come out next year, and it's going to in a small way share your incredible story. And my hope for you is that you take that and you write your own full book, because I will be the first in line to pick it up.
Oh, Kevin, thank you.
Yeah, and we'll wrap this up with a final question. How do people view or listen to your content today? How do they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Invisible Scars Podcast. And you can catch our podcast anywhere that you stream your podcast, Apple, Spotify, Google, all of that. We are everywhere. I am everywhere. I always say we, but it's just me. I would love for you, everyone listening, to listen and share it with anyone who needs it. I also want to mention my best friend, Susie, who is a psychologist. She comes on the podcast once a month and we kind of break down, you know, this month we did how to handle triggers around the holiday season, how to set healthy boundaries during this really emotional season for many of us. And one thing we have done is set up an email address for listeners or anyone who needs it to reach out to book an appointment with her to get help in any way that you need. I felt that it was really irresponsible to be sharing this kind of triggering content and not have anything set up for my listeners to reach out to in terms of support. So if you are feeling triggered by the podcast, by anything that you are hearing on it, or if you just are really struggling, you can reach out to hello@invisiblescarspodcast.com and a clinical psychologist will get back to you to try and set something up.
hello@invisiblescarspodcast.com. At Invisible Scars Podcast on IG. That's how you can reach Jessalyn. Jessalyn, you're incredible. So is your story. We're grateful to have you on the Hindsight's podcast. And we hope to do a lot more work with you in the future to help people of all walks of life find hope around the corner so they can thrive. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Take care.